Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Professor Reese, for a very interesting discussion, which I really don't have much to disagree with, so I'm going to try to create something disagreeable here. The first point I want to make is that nowadays we think of scientists as being a very specialized group of people, but in fact the term scientist and the idea of there being a sort of specialized career of being a scientist is really no more than 150, 160 years old. And if we look at the English language, the word scientist was coined in the 1830s by William Whewell. And it's at this point we start to get the idea that doing science is a specialized field rather than what it had been traditionally, namely the sort of thing like physical fitness that any free person ought to be able to engage in and be able to participate in. My interest in, and in fact when people talked in the 18th century about science as the force of enlightenment, this is what they meant. They meant that science would be integrated into people's lives. So regardless of whether you were working on a particular experiment, you would be able to understand and talk sensibly and perhaps even participate in decision-making having to do with the disposition of scientific research. Now, these days are long gone, and they've been gone at least, I guess, for about 50 years, maybe even longer. But my interest in science, as a sociologist of science and as someone who's committed to the democratization of science, is to recover that kind of enlightenment ideal. Now, it seems to me that this has been lost at several different levels. The first level at which this has been lost is within the scientific community itself. As we all know, science is integral to all aspects of social life. In fact, it's been integral to all aspects of social life for a long time, even when it hasn't been supported by the state, which is relatively recent in the English-speaking world. And so the point is, however, that within science itself, though you will find scientists throughout society, in various class strata, in various sectors of the economy, in various areas of politics, nevertheless, when we look at who are the representatives for science, who is speaking on behalf of science, we typically have a certain, you know, usual suspects, the great and the good, right, members of the Royal Society, people who are at the best universities in the country, and so forth. Considering that science itself is already fairly democratized in terms of already being integrated within society, this is a rather ironic state of affairs, to say the least. So in a sense, the elitism of science, it partly has to do with the governing structure within science itself that doesn't fully represent its own membership. This sort of point was hit home very strongly in the United States about a dozen years ago when the Carnegie Commission did a survey of people who taught across all the institutions of higher education in the United States and asked them, well, what do you consider to be research? And this is during a period where every university was being sort of pushed in the direction of doing the sort of thing the best universities do, going after for the big grants, going after to do the cutting-edge research that's most glamorous and so forth. And it was quite clear that people had totally different conceptions of what research was about, depending on where they were in the scientific establishment. So there's a sense in which science itself internally is not democratized. Of course, one can talk about issues about how the peer review system works, which is itself very elitist. And all of this is without even talking about the issues of commercialization, which are very important issues and will be raised subsequently in the other speakers' talks. So there is a problem of democratization within science itself that needs to be addressed even after, or perhaps before, we address the issues that have to do with science's commercialization. So there's a problem within science itself. But there is also another issue which has to do with the democratization of science more generally in society at large, and the fact that it's generally acknowledged by everyone in this sort of issue that people and that the public and science are somehow at odds with one another. It's not that the public dislikes science. In fact, generally speaking, if you look at the sales of popular books about science, especially in this country, they have never been higher. Television programs having to do with science are very popular. In a sense, I would say science is actually quite important as far as providing a sort of a public level of spirituality, you might say, that was previously fulfilled by religion. I'm quite happy to accept that. But what is the problem, why people get upset about science, is that they don't understand how exactly science interacts with politics, how science interacts with industry, and more than that, whatever knowledge that they've gained from the popular literature in science, they have no forum in which to exercise their opinions about this. Right? So it's purely passive, it's purely spectatorial. Right? There is no organized forum for this. And it seems to me this is really the pressing question. If we want to talk about the democratization of science and society, we have to come out with some very clear institutions, right, that have the backing of government and the support of the scientific community that on a regular basis will enable the public to participate. And until that happens, we're going to have the sort of malcontent and discontent that we see at the moment. This is not the fault of journalism, and it's not the fault of the scientific community necessarily. If anything, I think this is a problem with political will, right? In other words, introducing a level of democratization where it hasn't been before. And what I would suggest in a sort of concrete way about what's needed is the institution of the consensus conference, which has, of course, been used in this country episodically and has, in fact, been used in 25 countries throughout the world, including countries such as Japan and Korea, which do not have a strong tradition of participatory democracy. And I would like to recommend this as a way in which to integrate the public more thoroughly in issues having to do with the role of science in society. And the idea is basically a citizen's jury concept, right, which literally means that there are members of the public who are participating as jurors. And who are the witnesses, as it were, the expert witnesses? They are members of the scientific community. They are members of special interest groups, such as Greenpeace and so forth, each of whom have very strong, well-formulated views about an issue relating to science and technology that's relevant to society at large. And the people have been given a brief, the people who are the jurors in this consensus conference, namely to draw up policy guidelines which will provide the constraints within which then the duly elected legislators will decide what the policy should be on the matter. So in other words, the consensus conference is not designed to usurp Parliament, but rather it is a way of providing some kind of initial input of guidelines, of constraints. Now, why should we have this kind of procedure? Well, a lot has to do with the way in which science and technology impacts on society at large. The first point to make about it is that often the impact is indeterminate, right? I mean, so in other words, the interesting thing about the consensus conference from that standpoint is that they are like jurors. That is to say, relative to the issue concerned, they are neutral. They are not already stakeholders necessarily in this, okay? Because science and technology issues, if they are of general social import, could potentially affect everyone, and we don't know that yet. And so that kind of uncertainty, in a sense, has to be built into the people making the decision. Am I already over?
No, not yet.
Okay, sorry.
This clock here is very intimidating.
I know, but that's democracy. So there is that issue here, that the uncertainty of not knowing whether you yourself will be personally affected by what we're talking about, whether it be something like gene therapy or genetically modified foods or whatever, is a very important feature about the decision makers, because it's potentially universal, but you don't know exactly who's going to be affected by it. It could be you, it could be your children, it couldn't be you, maybe it's not you at all. And that's a very important feature of the decision making. And then what happens, what you find in each of these cases, is that the public is able to come up with some very reasonable guidelines. Very often, in fact, one of the things that you see is that there's a learning process taking place. Not only in terms of the public learning something about the science that's involved, but the public learning something about democratic politics. So in other words, they think beyond their own interests. They think beyond their own personal or family interests. Because as a collective endeavor, you're forced to make these kinds of decisions. I may not want gene therapy, but I may allow this on someone else because the scientific evidence seems to be reasonably good and it doesn't seem that dangerous, or at least the risks seem sufficient that I would allow other people to take the risk if they want to. And this is a phenomenon that comes up again and again from these consensus conferences, that people are not irrational about this. They are not just going for the most risk-averse strategy. Rather, they're quite open. And in fact, one of the things they like about this kind of process is that their opinions are being taken seriously. I think a big mistake that the scientific community often makes when dealing with the public is they think the problem is just ignorance and fear, when in fact it's just lack of participation. If you get the public involved more directly, it doesn't follow they're going to be risk averse. Maybe in the beginning they will be, but as this process becomes more and more integrated with our understanding, with the way science policy works, then it seems to me that the public will become more adventurous because they'll understand, in fact, how their decisions, how they think about things, is impacting on the way in which science is being brought about in society. So to conclude, it seems to me that the way to go as far as the directing of science is concerned is toward greater democratization. But it requires that we have clear institutions for doing this. And a consensus conference, it seems to me, is a very good model for doing this. And moreover, if the history of consensus conferences so far across the world is any indication, it will not necessarily lead to people being afraid of science or wanting to close down science in the long term. Little by little, I think you will find there'll be greater integration and greater openness through participation. And in that respect, I think, then the people will come to learn to trust the scientists more, and the scientists will hopefully come to learn to trust the people more. Thank you.
Thank you. Right, now we have William Stewart.